Welcome to The Uncensored Pharmacist, where we're rewriting the prescription for health, one candid conversation at a time.
Join us as we delve into the holistic world of well-being, covering everything from the latest pharmacy insights to navigating health regulations and championing patient advocacy.
From in-depth discussions with experts to tips on navigating the pharmacy aisle, we're here to enlighten, educate, and engage.
So make sure to amplify your health journey by subscribing for weekly holistic health insights. Tune in, turn up the volume, and let's get started.
I'm Miranda.
And I'm Rachel. And we're the Uncensored Pharmacist.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Uncensored Pharmacist podcast. I am Miranda.
And I am Rachel.
And we're going to be talking today about statins. Statins are some of the most prescribed medications in the world, and they are some of the most controversial in the world as well. And we love to talk about controversy.
We sure do. That's what we do here. We're the Uncensored Pharmacists, right? So we got to live up to our name.
Yeah. So, Rachel, do you want to go ahead and just kind of start us off and share a little bit about statins and why we're going to talk about them today, why this is the topic we chose?
Yeah, well, number one, they're one of the most prescribed medications out there and probably overprescribed in my humble opinion, but there's side effects that need to be, you know, thought of when these medications are prescribed. And that includes issues like muscle issues, liver issues, and memory loss are some of the bigger ones. If you're on a statin, make sure you're on coenzyme Q10 to help, you know, with some side effects that may come up to be with the statins. So it helps keep your energy up, helps protect your heart from some issues. So you had some staggering statistics that you were sharing with me right before we jumped on and to record. So you want to share those first? Because I think those are really, really powerful.
Yeah. So I think statins have been around for over 20 years now, and they were considered groundbreaking because they reduced LDL, reduced total cholesterol, and they are believed to have these significant cardiovascular benefits. They decrease risk of heart attack, decrease risk of stroke, decrease risk of death from heart disease, right? And heart disease or cardiovascular disease is the number one killer in the United States right now. So you're like, oh, we've come up with this amazing drug that targets and reduces the risk of the number one killer in our country. So that's huge. And it's huge for the pharmaceutical industries as well, because almost anybody is their target market. Almost anybody could benefit based on the information that has been shared with us. And so the guidelines, the recommendations right now are that if you have an elevated cardiovascular risk, and at least one risk factor for heart disease, that you should be on a statin if you're over, I think if you're over 40. And those risks are like those risk factors are things like smoking, diabetes, hypertension, and then of course, high cholesterol, high LDL, high total cholesterol. But in when we look at medical literature and we look at the benefits, and we just kind of say, oh, it decreases risk of this disease that is the number one killer in America. Well, how much does it decrease risk? I think, and if you're on this podcast, reach out to us and we would love to hear your feedback about this. But if you are on a statin, if you are on a medication, I suspect that you believe that taking that medication is going to prevent you from having that thing. That taking, my doctor put me on a statin, so I won't have a heart attack. My doctor put me on a statin, so I won't have a stroke. But the statistics are definitely staggering. So using the data that we have from all of the clinical studies with the statins that have been done over the last 20, 25, 30 years, we calculate what's called number needed to treat and number needed to harm. What that means is we can calculate how many people we have to treat with a statin in order to prevent one heart attack, how many people we have to treat in order to prevent one stroke. We can also calculate number needed to harm. So let me start with number needed to treat, because these numbers, I think, are going to blow you away. For people with low cardiovascular risk, the number needed to treat is 400. We would, for someone with a low risk of having a heart attack, a stroke, or dying of cardiovascular disease, we would have to treat 400 of those people in order to prevent a heart attack or a stroke. For people with high risk, okay, so the people that would get the most benefit from a statin based on the guidelines, we have to treat 60 people in order to prevent one heart attack. 60. So for every 60 people that we give a statin to, we can prevent one heart attack. But it's even worse for stroke. Okay. We have to treat 268 people with a statin to prevent one stroke. So what about those other 59 people? Are they going to have a heart attack? What about those other 267 people? Are they going to have a stroke? So, you know, if that isn't frustrating enough that people are leaving the doctor's office with a statin, and I am not anti-statin. I think that there's a place for statins, but people, I think, are leaving the doctor's office with this medication thinking, my cholesterol is high. This pill is going to keep me from having a heart attack or a stroke. But we know that it's lifestyle in most cases that makes the biggest impact on our cardiovascular risk. We could lose weight. We could quit smoking. We could exercise more. We could make lifestyle changes that decrease those risk factors, even things that decrease our cholesterol. The exception would be if you have what we call familial hypercholesterolemia. That's where your body, your liver makes more cholesterol than it should. We have to do some kind of medical intervention for that. We can't fix that just with diet and exercise and lifestyle things, because that literally is your body genetics kind of leading to, you know, long-term problems. But I want to say this, and then I'm going to let Rachel talk. I talked about number needed to treat. So how many people we need to treat in order to get benefit in one person, in order to save one person's life. Okay. But what's the number needed to harm? Mm-hmm. How many people do we treat with a statin before we have harm? And there's lots of different types of harm. There's lots of different things that can happen. I mean, one in 100 people who take a statin will end up with severe, like rhabdomyolysis, severe muscle breakdown, one in 100. Well, that's not bad, right? That's just 1%. That's not too bad. Well, when you have 4 million people on it, that's a whole lot of people. 1%, it ends up being a lot when you're giving this drug to a lot of people. But if you look at number needed to harm, that number is actually only 21. So it only takes 21 people taking a statin for someone to be harmed by statin, specifically muscle pain. Diabetes is like 200. But so for like every 200 people that we put on a statin, one of those people is going to get diabetes. So more people end up getting diabetes than we end up preventing from having a stroke. So this is why I always say that we have to consider risk versus benefit, and why you are such an advocate for lifestyle modifications, nutrition, diet, and exercise and for managing any of these health issues. So, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So that, and it's funny because I've really been digging into balancing your hormones, specifically really targeting your cortisol. So that's your stress hormone. And your cortisol really is the driving force behind balancing your other hormones, neurotransmitters, whether it's estrogen, testosterone, or serotonin, you know, more of a mental wellness versus your sex hormones. So it impacts all of that. And cholesterol is a beginning of a lot of your hormone production as well. So sometimes when we're just looking across the board, and I think we've talked about this, we needed, you know, more of our own research, but sometimes the blood tests they do don't differentiate your cholesterol enough to really dive into what kind of cholesterol is it. And so they just go with the overall number. And if it's high and your HDL is not a certain level, they're like, oh, you're a candidate for these medications, without first tackling, you know, let's look a little bit at your lifestyle. Talk to me about what your lifestyle is like right now. You know, obviously the doctor can see if a patient is obese or maybe even morbidly obese. And yeah, you know, there are some people out there that won't make the modifications, make the changes. But I also believe in, if we can get people to do baby steps, right? If we can even start people hydrating, You know, I had a woman the other day, one of my clients, I asked her how much water she was drinking. She's like 16 ounces. I'm like, in a day? That's all you're drinking is, yeah, like one bottle. So even if we can start people on that path, we could see huge changes just in their appetite. Maybe they're eating a lot of unhealthy food because they think they're hungry, but they're just dehydrated. So that in turn might help them lose some weight, right? I mean, I think you can even lose like 5 or 10% of your body weight and make a huge decrease in your risk for, you know, cardiovascular issues or diabetes or anything like that. So balancing out that cortisol, which in turn will help you balance the other hormones, will help you balance serotonin, which will help you get sleep at night. So it's just making these tweaks. Like, I think that's where there's that breakdown in that office is like, how can we make little steps for you, you know, 1% shift the next 30 days, you'll be 30% better than you were 30 days ago. And then in 3 months, look at you can be a totally different person in 90 days. It's consistency. But I think it's finding like that chicken or the egg, like how do we got to get them feeling better in a faster way. And I think just finding little ways that they can start to improve their lifestyle, like go for a walk for 5 minutes tomorrow. If you haven't walked in 20 years, go for 5 minutes, then add a minute. And by the end of the month, you're doing 30 minute walks or 25 minute walks. Like, I think it's just, we overcomplicate the modifications. If we just kept it simple for people and they felt like they were succeeding, but this is a great way to potentially help a huge, because like you said, there is a very small population that these are medications that the benefits outweigh the risks. But that's not the percentage that's being prescribed right now.
Yeah. And interestingly, people with the familial hypercholesterolemia, the statins usually don't even work for them. We usually end up having to do another medication. But I think you hit the nail on the head right there is that, and I read this in an article recently in a women's health journal. And basically it said that people leave a doctor's office with a statin in a sense of security. That I'm good now. I don't need to quit smoking. I don't need to lose weight. I don't have to change my diet or exercise because this pill's got me. And we're really missing the mark by letting people believe that. But that really is perpetuated by our healthcare system and insurance companies who incentivize doctors to prescribe medications like statins. And we are going to talk about that in other episodes. But, you know, we're giving a medication like a statin because it's supposed to decrease risk of cardiovascular disease, but it increases the risk of developing diabetes, which is an additional risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And what the interventions that you're talking about, changes in lifestyle, moving more, eating differently, focusing on weight loss, these are things that are going to decrease risk for cardiovascular disease. They're going to help control cholesterol. They're going to decrease risk for high blood pressure and for heart disease. So it's the lifestyle modifications that have the potential to make the biggest impact, but it's not the things that we're being told we need to focus on. I mean, I think that there's like this general idea that, oh yeah, diet and exercise, but people don't know how to do that. People are never given any great guidance about what that really looks like. And we actually are going to have a Facebook group, and we would love for you guys to join our Facebook group. And we're going to be sharing some tips about some simple things that you can do every day to simple. It doesn't have to be hard. You can drink a little bit more water. You can walk a few more minutes. Simple things that you can do to make positive, lifelong changes in your life.
Subscribe to our podcast for weekly episodes where we'll bring you unfiltered and unbiased information about all things health, from debunking common myths and misconceptions to sharing insider knowledge on pharmaceuticals and the most innovative nutraceuticals and alternative therapies on the planet. We've got you covered.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a great point. It's people have this false sense of security once they're on these medications. Oh, this means I can go have my French fries every day, my deep fry. You know, I can eat all the things. I don't have to change anything. I have this medication now. So that's going to protect me from heart disease, stroke, diabetes, you know, and all the things that the statistics that you just shared prove otherwise. So it does. It gives you that, you know, the potentially this false sense of I'm good because I'm on the medication. And yeah, it's just keeping it very, really simple. You know, it's for some of these people, I realize like I used to when I was doing personal training with people and really trying to just revolutionize their lifestyle really quickly, because I thought that's the answer. And I used to think that too. I'm like, I just have to get you working out 4 or 5 times a day or 4 or 5 times a week. I need to change your food. And it's baby steps. It's hydration. It's adding protein and fiber. It's finding ways, just, you know, sleeping better. It's just, there's so many things that we can dive into that don't have to be adding more toxins into your body, having to go to a doctor all of the time to get prescriptions. Cause, you know, these medications, they always want to do blood work. So it's like, oh, come back and see us in 6 months, 3 months, whatever that is, so we can charge you for another doctor visit. You know, so it's time. It's your valuable time, like going to the doctor's office, spending time in a waiting, you know, where you, it's your life. You only get this one life and you have this body, and this is like your temple. This is your home, right? You carry your body everywhere you go. And so I know it can seem overwhelming maybe for listening to us and you're like, I have all these health issues. I just don't even know where to start. Like we've both mentioned, start by, okay, how much water have I been drinking on a daily basis? And if you don't have any idea, start kind of tracking it. Find a water bottle that you love to drink out of, you know, like a Stanley, a Yeti, or just a fun thing, you know, and maybe you drink more out of a straw than you do like sipping, whatever works for you, use it to your advantage. And it sounds simple, but I really, the more I work with people, I think that's where the success happens. And it's not a medication necessarily that's going to get you reducing these risks for you. So I'm so thankful you found those statistics, because those are, to me, those are so powerful.
I think it's interesting when you talk about people wanting to notice a difference. And when you are training with people and they want to see a difference, they want to see a change on the scale, they want to see a change in their body, they want to feel a difference. We want immediate gratification. And one of the things that whenever I was working in the clinic, so I worked in primary care for a long time. And again, we're going to talk about this in other podcasts. Insurance companies incentivize doctors to prescribe statins to people who have cardiovascular risk factors. Pharmacies are incentivized to make sure that people are adherent. And statins are medications that people tend to not be really adherent to. Now, the data, the statistics that I shared with you were based on double blind clinical trials. And so when we do those trials, that data is believed to be the best of the best, collected in an unbiased way. But in real life, people often are not adherent with statins because they have a lot of muscle pain that keeps them up at night. And so even though in the clinical studies, they say it's about 1 in 100, again, when you have a million people that are on this product, that's a lot of people that have that side effect. It's probably closer to 4 or 5% rather than 1% if you look at real life data. So people aren't that adherent with statins, also because they have these side effects and because they don't notice a difference. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you take something for, I don't know, if you take Sudafed, because you are congested and you have a stuffy head, you notice when suddenly your nose is running, that medicine kicks in and it is actively doing something in your body. But when you take a statin, you can't feel cholesterol decrease in your body. You can't feel blood flowing through your veins faster or slower. You can't feel your arteries getting harder or less hard. And so people tend to have a hard time staying on statins because they don't notice a benefit right now. Well, it's the same thing with diet and exercise. You might not notice a benefit right now, but something you have to be adherent to lifestyle, just like you have to be adherent to a drug. But again, we go back to, we focus on adherence. You've got to take the medication. Everybody wants you to take the medication. Why don't we ever talk about adherence to exercise, adherence to a healthy diet? And personally, I feel like it's because our entire world, our entire lifestyle in America is so fast paced that everybody can take a pill. Everybody has time to take a pill, but everybody doesn't have time, or we don't feel like we have time because this is our culture. We go, 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 go all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that is to our detriment.
Yeah. And that's why I really have, through the last couple of years, I've changed my approach, because I was questioning, honestly, I was questioning my own abilities as a personal trainer, as a nutrition, like a lifestyle coach. I'm not a registered nutritionist, but I can give advice on, like, here's how you could maybe tweak your breakfast to make you feel a little bit better, feel fuller longer type of thing. And so I was trying to just help them change. And they're doing all the nutrition, they're doing all of the fitness things that, you know, and then I question whether they're really doing it or not. But really what it was coming down to is, I'm like, there's a missing link here. It's like all of the fitness and nutrition in the world is still not getting you the results that you want physically, right? Because like you said, if you're not feeling it and you're not seeing it on the outside, you're thinking, what am I actually even doing? So it's, how can we get you feeling better quicker and at least sleeping better, let's say, and having more energy during the day? Like, that's something tangible that you can feel. And so where my approach started changing to help people with these lifestyle, I'm like, okay, maybe I need to just help them improve gut health, because that is where you're really making a lot of your hormones, like I was talking about earlier. So my whole approach to lifestyle has been like, keep it simple, silly. Like, help people really question, like, where are you at right now? Like, what are you doing? Like, this woman drinking 16 ounces of water, I'm not going to ask her to drink 64 ounces tomorrow. She's not going to succeed, because let's get her there in 2 weeks. Let's then get her walking 5 minutes a day, like I mentioned. And then by the end of the week, she's walking for 15 or 10 or whatever. So they feel like they're winning. And then we can say, okay, let's, along with those easy tweaks, we can add in some, you know, supporting supplementation for people. Because I think if we can get them some quick wins in their overall, like I said, energy, sleep, mood, maybe they're able to get more done in their day and they're feeling like they're accomplishing things. Like, it's small wins every day that really start to change people's perspective and the mindset. Like, we talk about that all the time. It's the mindset behind the lifestyle modifications.
Yeah. So, and I think we probably should do a podcast where we talk about that, about what motivates people. What motivates you? Like, what are your goals? What do you want to be able to do? My motivation is that I started my family later in my life. I want to be physically able to do all the things with my children. I want to be physically able to do things when they have children. That's my motivation. And other people may be motivated by different things, but we have to figure out what is it that we really want. And that has to be the thing that drives us. And they say that you either run from fear or you run to pleasure. And so people really have to reflect on where they are. And when we talk about statins, and we talk about, why are we on a statin? To reduce cardiovascular risk, to decrease heart attacks, to decrease strokes. That the diet and the exercise are the same. Even if you don't want to be a bodybuilder and you're not trying to be a size 2, you still have to realize that these are essential pieces of us living those long, healthy lives and having good cognition and being physically able to be, you know, be present and involved in things in life. Yeah, I'd love for us to revisit cholesterol and statins in the future, because you mentioned that cholesterol is essential for the formation of hormones. A lot of people don't realize that cholesterol is the backbone of estrogen and testosterone and progesterone. A lot of people don't realize that our brain is 70% fat. And so we have to have these components. Like, you can't eliminate all your fat from your body. Okay. Fat has a purpose. And I would also love to address this in the future. as we learn more, and science is fluid, and Rachel and I are going to be bringing you some things that are controversial, and we're not always going to agree, and that's okay because we still love each other, but science is fluid. And so we are learning new things all the time. So there's some evidence that says that medications like statins improve cognition. So some evidence says that because we decrease cardiovascular, like we decrease plaques, we're decreasing cholesterol, we improve blood flow to the brain, we have less vascular dementia. There are other studies that suggest that if we lower cholesterol too much, that we're decreasing the amount of fat in our brain and that it leads to cognitive decline. The jury's still out on that. And you've got people that are very divided, and we probably will do a whole podcast just on that. But the science now really is pushing, it seems to be indicating that inflammation is the underlying factor in all of these issues. That we may learn that it's not that obesity leads to diabetes and heart disease and high cholesterol. What we may learn and what it appears to be emerging is that inflammation leads to obesity and diabetes and hyperlipidemia and heart disease. And if that's the case, then when we're treating these diseases, these chronic diseases with these medications, we're not targeting the root cause. If the root cause is inflammation, how do we fix that? And the underlying factor really appears to be our diet.
Anything we can do to reduce inflammation, especially in the gut. I'll keep going back there because that's to me that root cause and gut health are like interchangeable in my world. Like when I'm talking about root cause, I'm probably talking about gut health and what's going on there. Because if you have inflammation there, you know, and this is a different topic, but that is it, your gut will show you a lot of what's actually going on in the rest of your body. And everybody, it manifests differently for people. The symptoms, you know, inflammation can be heart disease, it can be diabetes, it can be dementia or Alzheimer's. It's depending on, and I think they actually call dementia and Alzheimer's like diabetes type 3. I think I've heard that term.
They are calling it that now. They are. Yeah.
Okay. I thought I read that somewhere. I'm like, oh, so it's just telling you. It depends on the person, since we're all so different, right? We all react differently to different things, but we also show inflammation in our bodies differently, whether, you know, arthritis, fibromyalgia, like so many of these different things that people come to us with. And so it's just in the, you know, there's always new diagnoses for new medications. That's another topic for another day.
Yeah, it is.
But I think this is a good like ending point because we have so much more, but I think we both too want to say like, we love your feedback. We're going to, you know, give you ways to be in contact with us. So definitely your questions, your thoughts, because that can help us with more episodes down the line that we really want to bring to you. We want to bring you information for, you know, that you are all as our audience, as our tribe, as our community, interested in, because we want to continue to bring you value. So anything else to add to that, Miranda?
I love that you've mentioned gut health. And I just want to say one more thing about gut health. I think that gut health is it's a topic right now. It's a hot topic. And some people are kind of rolling their eyes like, oh, I'm so tired of hearing about gut health. But I think that it's time for us all to really wake up and realize that everything that we put in our body is filtered through our gut, everything. And it's not about diarrhea. And it's not about constipation, and it's not about IBS or acid reflux or stomach ulcers. When we talk about gut health, the reason that gut health is so important is because if you're not digesting your food appropriately, if you're not absorbing nutrients from your food correctly, and if your gut isn't working to take those nutrients and assimilate those and then distribute those into your bloodstream, to your other organs appropriately, then nothing else is working like it should. And I think when we talk about gut health, so many people are like, well, I poop every day, so I'm fine. It is so much bigger than that. And your medication doesn't even work right if you don't have good gut health. So I'm excited to explore that in a future episode.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It's definitely a topic I could talk about for a long time. And, you know, back 10 years ago, I was being laughed at by other pharmacists for even trying to help people with picking a probiotic out. So it's amazing how far we have come in a relatively short period of time. So yeah, we will definitely be talking more about that because you said it beautifully. It's not all about pooping or not pooping or having gas or bloating. It's so much. That's an indication that there's probably even more things going on in your body. So, well, thank you all so much for being here. And we look forward to bringing you a lot more episodes in the future. So stay with us. Like, follow, subscribe.
Follow us on our socials and check out our Facebook page as well at The Uncensored Pharmacist.
Yes. Yes. Join us there for even more information. And it's a place where all of you can all connect with one another and connect with us and get even more behind the scenes information that maybe we don't have on our podcast. So definitely check it out.
All right. Well, that sounds good. And all right. I guess we'll see you next time.
Yes. Take care, guys.
Bye, everybody. Subscribe to our newsletter and join our community. We are dedicated to empowering individuals with the most up-to-date information on healthcare, wellness, and patient advocacy.
Plus, as part of our community, you'll have access to exclusive content, expert Q&A sessions, and special promotions.
Ready to take charge of your health? Join the movement for a healthier, more informed you by following us on social media. We're here to give you the raw, uncut truth on healthcare and wellness, and we can't wait to have you join us on our journey. Tune in, subscribe, and let's start revolutionizing the way we think about health together.
See you next week for another episode of The Uncensored Pharmacist. Until then, stay healthy, informed, and uncensored.
You either run from fear or you run to pleasure.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
I'm good on my end if you're good on your end.